As we prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, it's good to remind ourselves that 1 in 5 of the nation's children is living below the poverty level. 1 in 45 is homeless, and many are right here in Iowa. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The PBS program Frontline premieres the documentary Poor Kids this Tuesday. And in it, Frontline travels to the Quad Cities to explore the lives of children growing up poor. We'll talk with filmmaker Jezza Newman about it. And with Tom Willis, he's in the film. He's a Quad Cities father living in a shelter with his wife and 4 children. Before that, we'll talk with a nurse living in Boone who just moved her family out of a homeless shelter. A look at Iowans living in poverty after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, it's good to remind ourselves that 1 in 5 of the nation's children is living below the poverty level, and 1 in 45 is homeless, many of them right here in Iowa. In fact, the PBS program Frontline premieres the documentary Poor Kids this Tuesday, and in it, Frontline traveled here to Iowa for this Poor Kids documentary to the Quad Cities area to explore the lives of children growing up poor. Later in the hour, we'll talk with the filmmaker, Jezza Newman, about that documentary, and also with Tom Willis, who is featured in that documentary. He's a Quad Cities father living in a homeless shelter with his wife and 4 children. And Willis is in the film. We'll talk with the 2 of them a little bit later in the hour. First of all, we want to talk with Mike Crawford. He's joining us in our Des Moines studio. Mike is a senior associate at the Child and Family Policy Center in Des Moines. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Give us a big picture here of children growing up in poverty in Iowa. Describe that picture. How many, to what extent?
Well, what we have currently is about 123,000 children in Iowa living in poverty. And poverty is measured by a dollar amount that is determined whether you're poor or non-poor. And currently, that's about $23,000 for a family of 4. So if you're below that, you technically live in poverty. In 2011, the poverty rate in Iowa was about 12.8%. So that's about 1 in 8 people in Iowa living in poverty. Mm-hmm. When you break it down by age, sometimes we ask the question, what age group in Iowa is most likely to live in poverty? Oftentimes people say, well, senior citizens are because they're on fixed incomes. And really because of retirement plans and Social Security, they're the best group off in a sense. Their poverty rate is about 6.9%, so just a shade under 7. Children, however, is over 17% of the children in Iowa living in poverty, as I mentioned, 123,000. Mm-hmm. And that's about 1 in 6 kids in Iowa live in poverty. And unfortunately, that's about a 50% increase since the year 2000 when it was 11%.
I'm trying to think about that income you just named, 23,000 for a family of 4. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? What kind of corners do you have to cut when you have that income? And I suppose it depends. Some communities are more expensive to live in than others. That really depends, doesn't it?
It sure does. And unfortunately, the poverty rate is determined, a threshold is determined across uniform across the country. And obviously, it's cheaper to live in Iowa than New York or some coastal cities. But that's the way it's determined now. When you look at that number, what we really found is that a lot of experts are using a 200% of poverty as a really good benchmark as far as if people can make ends meet or not. So that would be about $46,000 for a family of 4. And they figure if you make that much money, you can pay your bills and really keep some money going in the family. Because with the cost of insurance and child care skyrocketing over the last few years, it's really tough to do it on $23,000.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep track of how people slip into poverty? What are the factors that contribute to it?
Right, we do. We look at the poverty rate, year to year and see how it's changed. And as I mentioned earlier, for the children, it's gone up by over 50% in the last 10 years or so. And really the factor is obviously the number one factor is the economy. It really has a big billing there in a sense. But also we look at other things because sometimes families will be maybe just a shade above or a shade below poverty and really not much difference in their income will push them up or down one way or the other. So that's a factor we take in consideration also. Mm-hmm. And then also you look at people who are living less than 50% of poverty, which is less than half of the $23,000, and those are the people that are really, really hurting.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the high poverty areas within our state found more in rural or urban settings?
They are found in urban settings and most likely in the central city of an urban setting. And probably the three biggest cities that have those or contain them, more census tracts that have high poverty areas, would be Des Moines, Davenport, and Waterloo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is it uniform, the help in say, these three cities, Des Moines, Davenport, and Waterloo? Or does that vary really from city to city, depending on what resources the municipality has?
I think you're exactly right there. It does depend on the resources municipalities have. And now, there is some state and federal help that obviously comes down that would be most likely uniform across the cities, but the cities themselves will have an active role in that too.
Mm-hmm. I want to also talk with Ann Hoglund, who is joining us from our Ames studio. Hi, Ann. Ann, are you there?
I am.
Oh, hi. Ann Hoglund, thank you for joining us. You're the founder and board member of the Boone Hope Foundation. You are also a retired school teacher. We want to focus in on the Boone Hope Foundation because it does some really great things in that community. Tell us a little bit. We hope to be talking in a moment with a single mother who has some kids that you've been helping in just a moment, but I want to talk to you about your project here in Boone, and Mike did not name Boone as one of the areas that has a big problem, but give us a picture of poverty in Boone. What do you see there?
Boone is pretty typical, probably, of many communities in the state of Iowa and in the Midwest. Our students in the elementary level, there's approximately 40 to 50%, probably a little over 40%, that are in the poverty or free and reduced lunch assistance. So we're finding that educators are seeing students with needs of all kinds, mm-hmm. and that falls in line with what we've been hearing today.
It's interesting that your Hope Foundation does not accept applications from people. So tell me about how you identify kids, families in need.
Our educators, and that includes our support staff, really are the eyes and ears of the foundation. And we know that as educators, we see these needs and we grow to care for each one of the children that we work with. And much of the time, the difficulties our students face are the things that teachers can't fix. However, it's wonderful to have a way that a teacher can come to the Hope Foundation and say, I'm concerned about this family. Their utilities are going to be turned off. They're without food. Mm-hmm. A medical emergency has happened, and they're having difficulty traveling back and forth for medical assistance. And so this provides a staff member to come to the foundation and let us know that they are aware of a situation with a student in their classroom, and we try to provide immediate assistance for this family.
I wonder if it's ever difficult, and maybe you don't do the training here, maybe it's the school system that does. Because, you know, children are very good at covering up things they're not proud of, and certainly poverty would be one of them. So have you heard about some of the red flags that kids signal their poverty with?
I think our school district has done a good job as far as providing in-service for staff members to recognize some of these red flags and to really, you know, it's about building relationships with these students in the classroom. And these children, through this type of assistance, really know that the educator cares for them, not only as a student, but cares for their entire family. And so I think the educators are really in tune with what is going on with their students, and many times it just comes out with a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they're aware that they have to be very careful because, of course, it's a stigma to be in poverty, and you want to help the child, but not make that child suffer any more than under the stigma.
Absolutely, and we try to talk to the family, let them know that there is help, what would help them the most. We try to provide help with food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and medical expenses, something that helps them to survive daily life. Mm-hmm. And many times the parents will come to the teacher and say, we're not making it. This is our problem. And the teacher then can let us know.
How do you make it into a program, a help program, that is really temporary in nature so that you see that the focus is on helping those in the greatest need, but also to make people or to help people become self-sufficient once again?
Well, you know, I think that many times we do see that families have been helped and they see that there is somebody that cares for them. I mean, just the idea of being offered hope. We had a family who faced a medical crisis and they really used it, that difficult time, as an opportunity to help their children understand that there are people who really care about them. And when they thought that was going to take them to their knees and they actually survived the situation and received help from the community and from Hope, they became stronger and richer in their lives than they were before. So
I see you have some statistics here to look back on in this calendar year. From January 1st, I see you have spent some $20,000, and you've helped 74 families in Boone. And in those families, 142 children. That's quite an achievement.
Right, and those statistics go up every single day. We have, since that time that you have received, the statistics have gone up another $1,000. And our goal is to provide help as long as we have the money to be able to do it, and we're happy to help these families.
Okay, I wanted to see if we have another guest with us. Heather Rasmussen, are you there?
I am.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for joining us. You are a nurse living in Boone. You just moved with your family out of a homeless shelter, and I understand you're the mother of three kids, an 18-year-old daughter, two younger kids, and you've taken the step to move out of the shelter. Congratulations on that. That must feel great.
It does.
Uh-huh. Take us back to the year, the time when things started to go downhill. When was that?
It was just last year at this time. We, you know, I'm a nurse and I've been working full time since I was 16, and, I've always prided myself on, you know, raising my children independently without any help. Mm-hmm. But last year at this time I lost my job.
That is a blow that, so many people, fear, and some don't imagine can happen to them, but it can really happen to anybody, I'm sure. Heather, we can still feel the pain in your voice. After losing your job, you, I assume, had a hard time paying bills and eventually were evicted, weren't you?
Yes, definitely. It took about 5 months before we got to the point where there was just nothing left.
It's a hard place to go, but I wonder if you can share with us the fears that you had at that time. When you see this spiral ahead of you, your fears for you, and I'm sure most of all for your children.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, just every day knowing that I didn't know where the next rent payment was going to come from. Mm-hmm. It was awful. Mm-hmm. Very stressful.
How did you talk with your kids about it?
I've always had a very open relationship with my kids. The younger ones, I, you know, didn't really discuss it a whole lot with them because I didn't feel like they would understand. But my oldest daughter, she was a huge source of support for me. And, I mean, we just kind of got through it together. So,
right. And I'm sure kids going off to school, coming back, they, you know, they don't have certain things that other kids have, and this difference is really painful. I'm sure as a mother, you'd like to give them all the things that the other kids have.
Right. And I mean, I'm used to being able to do that. But, you know, when I lost my job, that ability just went out the window, and I never imagined that my family would be in that position.
The Boone Hope Foundation helped you out. How did they find you? How did that start?
Well, initially they offered help to pay a month of rent before I went into the shelter. At that point, we had been struggling for so many months. I just thought, you know, they might pay this month, but then next month I'm going to struggle again. Mm-hmm. So I made the choice to just go ahead and go into the shelter, give myself a few months of a break from having to worry about all that. And when we got to the shelter, we stayed there through the summer. You know, I got a job and have maintained full-time employment, and it just really gave us a break. So at the end of that stay, You know, I had an Alliant Energy bill that I was behind on and had to be paid off before we moved out. So I was able to get a hold of the Hope Foundation again. My daughter actually initiated the contact at school, mm-hmm. and they were able to help us pay that bill so that we could move into our own home again.
At some level, was that hard to take that help? First of all, that's an admission, isn't it?
You know, it was really difficult at first, just moving into the shelter.
Yeah.
But as time went by, I really started to learn that it's not a bad thing to need help. So by the time I got to the point where I was ready to move out, I was ready and willing to accept any help that was available.
You lost your job as a nurse, then lost your dwelling, your home,
mm-hmm.
Moved into the shelter. Now, that is a difficult position to be in, too, as if, you know, being unemployed for one thing, but then being unemployed. And how did you approach prospective employers, letting them know that you lived in a homeless shelter?
I didn't really tell anyone at work. I actually had a job, a part-time job, before I moved into the shelter. And I think I had gotten it right before I got evicted, actually. But... you know, as a nurse, you're there to help people. So
I
just had no intention of telling anyone there.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. The job market for nurses is supposed to be pretty good, but I suppose in your area, not? Or?
Well, it is good. But I took a couple months off of work to go back to school. And I was just hoping during that time that some low-income housing would open up so that I could stay in school and further my education, which would, in turn, further my career opportunities. And it just didn't work out that way. So,
what do you think might have happened had the Boone Hope Foundation not been there to catch you and your family?
It definitely would have hindered our recent move. And it was very quick. I found out that there was a house available. We looked at it, found out within a couple of days that they wanted us to move in. And I think that was on like Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And we emailed her on Tuesday. And by Friday.
Is this Friday of last week?
It was a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you're back in a home, out of the shelter.
Right.
How would you describe your outlook now?
Oh, much better. Much better. I still have plans to go back to school, it's just going to take me a little longer than I had initially thought, but that's okay. My outlook is much more positive now than it was at the beginning of the year.
Ann Hoglund, you're there in Ames as well. How many families like Heather's are there out there?
I think there's probably more than we even have any idea. Many times we've talked to other communities. Well, when we first heard about homeless families in our community at an in-service, I think we were all kind of insulated. We were in denial that was going on in our community. So I think that communities, if they really open up to this and to the concept that there are many, many families that are needing help, they're going to find probably large numbers.
Mike Crawford at the Child and Family Policy Center there in Des Moines, that something jumped out at me that Ann just said, in denial, because I'm sure many of our listeners don't spot the poverty in their day-to-day lives, in their work routines, do they?
No, I don't think they do, and I think they make a good point. And you know, particularly in the small and rural areas of the state, it's much harder to hide the poverty. And so, a lot of people try and hide it themselves. Where in a larger city like Des Moines, it's a little easier to hide that. You can be kind of hiding in plain sight. But again, much more difficult in a rural community.
And $20,000 spent this year assisting mm-hmm. 74 families in Boone. Where does that money come from?
Each year we have a Festival of Hope where we raise money through silent auction. We have a Hope Cafe. We have entertainment for the day. And the community really comes together, and it's like a community celebration where they show that they are supporting these families. And this is what makes our community and any other community strong. This year we're hosting the Festival of Hope on December 8th at the Boone Community Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Mike talked about some trends earlier, the increasing poverty. What are you seeing specifically in Boone? Are you seeing a fairly constant number of families in need, or is it increasing?
I'd like to say it's constant, but I think that it definitely is increasing each year. I think our assistance is out there a lot more this year than it was the previous year. And I think that we'll continue to see this with the economic situation the way it is. Mm-hmm. We're finding more people that are having difficulty with utility bills. But it's not just that. There are families that are doing just fine, but they may have a medical crisis, and that can take them down very quickly. And just having to travel back and forth to Des Moines or Iowa City for medical care can really impact a family and their financial situation.
Heather Rasmussen, you just moved out of the homeless shelter with your kids, your 18-year-old daughter, your two younger kids. How old are the younger ones?
14 and 6.
14 and 6. Mm-hmm. Now, in the next half hour, after we say goodbye, we're going to be talking with the director, producer of a new Frontline program on PBS that will be airing on Tuesday, talking about poor kids, also focusing on kids here in Iowa. When you observed your kids, what do you think is the most difficult part? What did you see that your kids struggling with the most?
As far as living in the shelter?
Well, the whole thing, the losing the job, having to leave the home, was it the school? Was it the way others looked at them? Was it the fact that they couldn't have certain things that they wanted?
I guess that's kind of a difficult question to answer because my kids just sailed right through it. As far as being a family, it's really brought us a lot closer. They don't complain about not having things that other kids have.
Mm-hmm. They never did that, or they came not to?
I don't know. It's not that they, you know, don't want things or don't say things about wanting, you know, I'd like an iPhone. Well,
right. Not going to happen right now anyway.
Right. My kids are very good about going out and finding ways to earn their own money to buy those things.
Yeah.
So when it came time to move to the shelter, it certainly was a difficult move, but it happened at the end of the school year. So mm-hmm. No one really knew that we were there.
This is a big step that you've taken here, and we certainly appreciate you coming forward, Heather, to talk about it. It's something that we need to be told about, that we mm-hmm. need to learn about. So why did you take this step, and we're good enough to come and to share your story?
Because I know that there are so many families out there in need. Just living at the shelter, I met so many amazing women that, for their own reasons, found themselves homeless. And it's still, as you can tell, a very fresh wound for me.
Heather, we want to wish you all the best. Thank you for coming into our studio. We wish you all the best to you and your kids.
Thank you.
Heather Rasmussen joining us. Also Ann Hoagland with the Boone Hope Foundation. And Mike Crawford, thank you for coming into our Des Moines studio, the senior associate at the Child and Family Policy Center. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to continue our focus on poverty. The PBS program Frontline premieres a documentary, Poor Kids, this Tuesday. And in that documentary, travels to the Quad Cities to explore lives of children growing up poor. We'll meet the maker of that documentary. Also, Tom Willis will be with us, a Quad Cities father living in a shelter with his wife and four family. The focus on poverty. Children in poverty, right here in Iowa. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour we prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, we're reminding ourselves that one in five of our nation's children is living below the poverty level, one in 45 homeless, many of them right here in Iowa. In fact, the PBS program Frontline is premiering a documentary titled Poor Kids this Tuesday, November 20th at 9 p.m. our time. In Poor Kids, Frontline travels right here to Iowa, to the Quad Cities area, in fact, to explore the lives of children growing up poor. Here's one of the clips from the documentary from an Iowa boy named Tyler.
There's good days and bad days. Sometimes when we have cereal, we don't have milk, we have to eat it dry. sometimes we don't have cereal and we have milk. It's often like switch and swap. Sometimes, like when I switch the channel and there's a cooking show on, I get a little more hungry and I want to vanish into the screen and start eating the food.
That's Iowan Tyler, 12 years old. He lives with his mother and his sister Kaylee in various locations around the Quad Cities. Here's another clip from the documentary. Brittany is 9, lives with her parents, an older brother and a baby brother outside the Quad Cities. Brittany's dad lost his job and her mom can't work.
One day I tried getting in the shower and it was cold. I put the hot on all the way and no cold, and it was freezing. It felt like shoving your face in a bunch of snow. It was freezing. The hot water shut off because we didn't pay the bill in time.
Frontline documentary premiering this Tuesday, titled Poor Kids. It's a documentary that offers a unique perspective on the nation's flagging economy, on the impact of unemployment, foreclosure, financial distress, as seen through the eyes of children affected by it. Joining us this half hour, first of all, Jezza Newman is the producer, writer, director of this PBS documentary. And thank you for joining us, Jezza, by phone.
Thank you for having me.
Answer a few questions. We're going to meet one of the people in just a minute who is in the documentary. But, Jezza, tell us, why did you choose the Quad Cities area to shoot your documentary?
When we were researching the documentary, we did travel all across America, and we met hundreds of children. The initial drive was to find the most articulate kids who could really speak out about this subject, because the idea of the film was to tell it very much through the children's perspective and only a little bit of the adults, to sort of, so you know that there's a parent there and there's a solid family. But it was really to tell it through the story of the kids. And as we delved into a bit more, I realized that, you know, there are certain areas that people hear about all the time. When you associate poverty, people hear of places like Detroit, it comes up time again. You hear about large foreclosures in Las Vegas. And you know, what I also wanted to do is sort of bring the story from a place that you might not ordinarily think is struggling with poverty and with feeding people at the moment. But because of the current economic climate and the recession and the things that have happened, you know, there are vast tracts of middle America that are now struggling. Mm-hmm. Families who haven't experienced this before for the first time, they might be having to go and sign up for food stamps or, you know, in the worst case scenario, like the family in the film, actually end up in a shelter, a homeless shelter. So I felt that there was a real strength. It was driven by the quality of the children, and it so happened that we were lucky enough to find three girls and their brothers who are absolutely amazing and articulate. Mm-hmm. But you know, part of the process of deciding who to go, it started to make sense. And the more I talked about it, the more people said to me in the Quad City area, you know, what are you doing here? Everybody flies over us. No one comes here. You know, they felt really underreported. And yet they were, you know, all the agencies who are doing an amazing job here, but they're all themselves struggling with finance. They're all, you know, seeing programs of outreach being hit by, you know, loss of funds. So it seemed like there really was a real story to be told from here.
It's interesting that you say that people on the outside, you wanted to do this precisely because it's not Detroit, because people don't look at that name, don't say Iowa and connect it with poverty. And it's interesting also because many of our listeners, many of us who live here, who have spent our lives here, don't connect Iowa with poverty.
No, absolutely, and I think that's what's happening across America at the moment. You know, there's vast tracts of America that is in states where you don't think there is poverty, you don't connect the dots, but the reality is it is there. And I think part of that is because what I found as I traveled in America and in Iowa, you know, there's a great work ethic here, and also people are still embarrassed to ask for help. You know, people feel that it's the American way is to go out there and you survive come what may. And, you seek that American dream and you try and you know, there's a lot of pride. And also there's an awful lot of stigmas associated with poverty. So if you admit you're poor, you're almost admitting that you're a lesser person. And we all do that. You know, people will judge people. Someone will move into an area, a nice middle-class area, and they'll be poor. And people go, oh, I wish they weren't here. You know, my house might devalue. you know, instead of going, oh, look, there's an American in need who could help do with a little bit of a hand, helping hand, you know. And that's what I found here in Iowa, was that, you know, people weren't asking to be given charity for the rest of their lives. They weren't asking for some great welfare handout so that they could just put their feet up and not bother anymore. These are people who are desperate to keep working, desperate to have a roof over their heads, and all they're asking is, you know, can you give me a little support here? You know, I just need to get through this patch. If I can get through it, then I can start taking care of myself again.
Mm-hmm. You must have been very interesting in the political interested in the political conversation we've had recently, summed up in that that phrase, the takers and the makers. You're saying that the takers, they don't want to be takers. They want to, if we identify them that way, really not be dependent.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. I mean, yes, of course, there will always be those who do. It's not, you know, I'm not foolish here. I'm a journalist. Of course there are. But the vast majority don't. They would far rather. I mean, I have witnessed this myself. I have seen families, you know, and had fathers talk about their embarrassment that they're supposed to be the dad. And what kind of dad am I if I have to go to a food pantry and beg for food? You know, and there are mothers who just feel like, you know, I'm here to nurture and take care of my children, but if I can't even cook them a meal, what kind of mum am I? You know, and I've seen this time and time again. You know, people just want to be able to live their lives, look after themselves. But the fact is, right now, people are struggling. And if you look at, if you speak to any of the, you know, I've looked at the food pantries here, I've spent a lot of time with them, and they're telling me that food pantries were set up as an emergency. You know, they were emergency aid in times of real strife. They are now used on a regular basis. A regular basis, people go to food pantries as their, you know, sustenance. And that they're, you know, they've even set up nutrition programs in schools where they've got backpack programs where they give a little pack of food to the kids the weekend.
Nutrition Club, it's called in your documentary. I saw that.
Yes, it is. It's called Nutrition Club in the documentary. The food pantry calls it the Backpack Club. So the schools changed it to nutrition because it felt like it. Again, everyone it stigmatizes people in poverty. So the schools, again, are working at how do we make this feel sort of less like you're sort of, you know, odd, that you're, but because you're poor, you're somehow different. You know, so that's why they changed the name, because they just felt nutrition sounded, you know, a bit nicer for children when you're dealing with kids.
Jezza Newman is with us, a producer, director, and writer of the new PBS documentary Poor Kids, which focuses on poor children in the Quad Cities area. Jezza, you're speaking to us, I understand, from the Salvation Army shelter in the Quad Cities?
That's correct, yes. And I'm in the Salvation Army shelter in Davenport, yeah.
And along with you is one of the men, fathers of a family featured in your film. Tom Willis is with us, a Quad City father. Tom, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us about your situation right now. Are you living in the shelter currently with your wife and, I understand, four children?
Yes, correct. I am here at the shelter in Salvation Army in Davenport, Iowa. We've been here now. Next month will actually be 1 year for us to live here. Mm-hmm. And at the time of my, I would say, I'm not ashamed to say, my downfall, we, you know, came here for help, and everyone here at the Salvation Army, they've been wonderful. The major, he's been a particular person that would come and say, well, hey, you know, you guys will make it through this situation as we're looking for employment and things of that nature, to try and, you know, get us out of this situation so that it doesn't look like, you know, the typical stereotype that, you know, someone is homeless, they don't want to work, or they're not applying themselves in the right manner, you know, and we've, you know, tried different jobs such as, you know, temp agencies and things of that nature, and the work just eventually runs out. But, yes, you know, we are here, and, you know, it's been a great help for us. Sometimes, you know, things will get pretty low even for the funding here, such as Mr. Newman said himself, as far as, you know, the funding to help the families here. But somehow, some way, they, you know, they come up with something else for us, and they've never given up, you know, for us to be able to have the things that we need to survive, for, you know, from bedding to, you know, food and different other things.
So, now, we learn in the documentary, Tom, that you are working. You've been actively seeking employment, I think, the whole time, and you're currently employed, but you have to drive a long ways to get to your job, don't you?
Yes, it's it's pretty rough. It's about 50 miles one way and 50 miles back.
And the whole family comes with you when there's the kids go to school, and then you have to leave the shelter during the day?
Yes, sir. At the particular time, we have to leave the shelter, you know, and, you know, my wife, she needs the car during the daytime for the children to pick them up from school and different things on and off. And, you know, she has to drive that 50 miles there, back, then there, and back, you know, to pick me up after a 12-hour shift. And, you know, it's pretty rough, you know, but it's something that we have to do. And it's wearing on us pretty tough. You know, there's just, you know, some days that we're looking and saying that even gas-wise, you know, fuel for the vehicle, we're just not going to be able to do this. And it worries me like crazy because, you know, you have a woman with four children, and they're sleeping 10 minutes after she makes, you know, starts into her trip.
Right.
And you just don't know what's going to happen out there on the highway with a vehicle that's in the shape of mine.
Help us understand, because so many people listening are not in your situation. Haven't you had your experience? You've been at the Salvation Army shelter with your family for a year now. What has been the problem with getting out of the shelter, with finding a job that provides enough income for you to live somewhere else?
Well, if I may throw this in here, I've been to school at the Blanc Center for Welding, and I received my certification for welding. The problem is finding work in the field that I'd like to, you know, pursue as far as becoming a full-time welder now that I'm certified, and it's pretty hard. You know, this is something that you cannot just walk into a company and say, hey, hire me. You know, you have to keep on pushing and trying to get someone to notice that, you know, you would have to, you know, be able to do the job that they want. You have to have a year experience once you're done with school for welding. And I just want someone to say, well, hey, you know, maybe I can give this guy a shot. And if he shows up to work every day and he's responsible, we can give him this. And I've been trying to, you know, do, you know, this exact thing for me to get into a job, but most of them are minimum wage jobs, and you just cannot run a family. If I get out of the shelter, minimum wage, you know, I am not going to be able to support a household with, you know, making, you know, whatever that minimum wage is. And I just want someone to, you know, hopefully give me a shot at working. You know, we're not looking for handouts or anything. We want to work a job. And, you know, as I was telling Mr. Newman, if I had one wish, it would be for me to be able to be employed by a company such as John Deere, let's say. You know, just get right to the point of saying that nobody's looking for a handout. I don't want any money or anything else. I just want someone to give me a chance to prove myself as a hard worker.
Tom Willis is a father in the Quad Cities, a father of four children, and his wife are living in a homeless shelter right now, have been for the past year, courtesy of the Salvation Army in Davenport. He's featured in the new PBS Frontline series, Poor Kids, which airs tomorrow night on PBS. Tell us, since the focus of the documentary, Jezza, is the children. Let me direct this to Tom. How have your children dealt with this? We see them in the film. I imagine, would you say that the hardest part is, of course, doing without a lot of things, but they have to put up with the stigma, right?
Well, there's definitely a stigma. You know, the children have been through some things that we know about and some things that we don't know about, you know. I try to talk to my kids on a regular basis and get an understanding of how they feel and what could be wrong with them, and not just concentrate on my wife and myself looking and saying, you know, this is hard for us. But, you know, most of all, I can say that times have been hard for my children, and I've seen them go through a change.
What kind of change? The nature of that change?
Well, it's definitely been a change for, I'd say, I don't want to say the negative, but it's been a change for them to understand that, you know, things are just not the way that they were when I was in business for myself and we had, you know, the extra money to, you know, take them to the mall or let's go out for, you know, a dinner or let's have a place to play that, you know, they can, you know, hang out at. And, you know, it's been a big change for them. I would just like to say that they have taken, you know, onto it a lot better than I thought they would.
Are they hopeful? Are they hopeful about the future, Tom?
Oh, yes. They're very hopeful for the future and for the people that will see the film. My daughter, she has just shown me some things that I didn't even know about her, and it's been a learning situation for us. And she is just amazing, Jasmine. Right. She has come to a point where she's shown me that she's given me some strength, you know, actually, to look and say that, you know, things are going to get better, but, you know, they definitely hope for the future that someday, you know, things will get better. And it, once again, it all comes down to everybody's rooting that dad will somehow come out of this and be able to get some type of an employment that will take care of the family. You know, as I'm looking for work, my wife is looking for work, and she's also trying to go to school. She's would like to be a pharmaceutical technician. Mm. And we're, you know, trying to get the funding to, you know, help her out as far as going to school so that we won't have to have a handout.
Right, right.
We can, you know, go ahead and take care of ourselves in the long run, because a handout is, you know, it's just temporary. But
what did you make of being in a homeless shelter, Tom Willis, being in the situation that you are, and the whole political discussion that we've had, the characterizations of people who are receiving help when they're in need?
Well, you know, from what I get, I look at it and say, when you're receiving help when you're in need, that's fine. And I think that it's something that you want to take only when you're in need. Like I said, once again, we hope and pray that, you know, we can get on our feet, start back to work, and we won't need the help. You understand?
Right, right. Jessa Newman, we're running out of time. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the children. Tom shared something about his children. But what, going into this, since your focus was poverty in Iowa through the eyes of the children living it here in Iowa, what surprised you most about how they saw it, how they coped with it?
I think what's most amazing about these kids is their resilience. And, you know, I think that sometimes one of the children in the film, Kaylee, she kind of reminds you like that cartoon character that gets whacked with a hammer and squashed and gets back up and dusts themselves off and go, here we go again. And then they get hit by the truck and they get back up and they go, here we go again, you know. And there's this resilience that you see, and this determination still that they want to do better. And I've heard it time and time again where they say, I want to do better than my mother. My mother's made mistakes, sure, and things aren't working out, but I can do better than this. And there's still a really strong family units here. You know, people like to say that, you know, families in poverty are dysfunctional. You know, they're falling apart. But that's not the case. That's not the case at all. Sure, as things progress and the crisis get deeper, you'll get things like depression. People will suffer in that way, and they will need extra help through it, but their basic family unit is strong to see. And I think you'll see that, you know, you will see that in the course of the film. You know, even Taylor and Kaylee, you know, their brother and sister, of course, they fight a bit, but also you see them working together to try and, you know, do better for themselves. Same with Brittany and Roger, you know. And I think it's this amazing, you will see amazing, articulate children who just want a future, who just want a better life, who don't want to become, you know, people having welfare handouts. They don't want to be those stereotypes that people want to label them as.
Tom,
you know, and, I mean, why should you care? You should care because the children of today will be the adults of tomorrow. That's the one guarantee in all of this. So what sort of child do you want running your country as you grow old? Do you want a dysfunctional adult who was never looked after, who's never supported in their time of need, who hates society because society wasn't there for them? Or do you want a functioning adult who was helped in their time of need, who might not have, you know, the greatest job on earth, but as long as Johnny and Jasmine and Kaylee and Tyler, these are names, these are real children, these aren't statistics, these aren't figures. As long as those kids in their adult life are, you know, managing to take care of themselves, managing to have some kind of future, then that's the America surely everybody wants.
Jezza Newman, thank you. I wanted a few seconds to Tom Willis. What do you hope viewers will take away from this documentary, learning about you and your family at the homeless shelter? Quickly,
well,
please.
Yes, very quickly. But I would like to say that I hope that everyone can look and say that, you know, once again, these are people that do exist, and these are not just the statistics. But it's not just about me and my family. There's a number of other people here that are, you know, a vast majority of people that are suffering from the same issue. So I worry about my family, but I also worry about families that are, you know, right next door to me in the shelter that need food tonight.
Tom Willis, we have to go. Thank you very much to Tom Willis and Jezza Newman. Want to remind our listeners that Poor Kids airs on Frontline. That's at 9 p.m. tomorrow on Iowa Public Television. Thank you very much. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Help in Ames from Garrett Van Leeuwen. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.